content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello and welcome to Heard Any Good Books Lately? A program from the North Carolina Reading Service. I'm George Douglas. This program is brought to you by the Friends of the North Carolina Library for the Blind and Physically Handicapped, an organization of citizens, volunteers, and patrons all interested in supporting the library and the services it provides. Now, the Friends group was founded in 1989 and now has more than 300 members across North Carolina. If you'd like to join the Friends group yourself, we'll have information on how to do that later in this program. This program is all about books, with special emphasis on those available from the North Carolina Library for the Blind. The library has more than 86,000 titles in its collection. Books and magazines are available in large print, braille, and talking books as well. The library has more than 11,000 patrons across the state, and if you're not a patron but are interested in becoming one, I'll have more information at the end of this program as well. This month, we'll take a look at some of the most popular books checked out within the past few months at the North Carolina Library for the Blind and Physically Handicapped, the big books right at the end of 2019. We're going to begin with a book by a very, very popular author, and this is the classic Christmas release that came out from John Grisham. The book is called The Guardians. And I'm going to read a review from Maureen Corrigan, who is a book critic of the NPR program Fresh Air that you may be familiar with. She also teaches literature at Georgetown University. What is there left to say about a new John Grisham novel? Well, maybe only that Grisham has done it again. The Guardians is Grisham's 40th novel. He's now 64 years old and has been writing suspense novels pretty much nonstop since A Time to Kill was published in 1989. Now, most of his novels are legal thrillers, but Grisham has also branched out into stories about rare books, sports, and medicine. His 2015 e-book, The Tumor, is about an experimental cancer treatment called focused ultrasound technology that Grisham champions. Grisham has ever written a YA legal series featuring a 13-year-old amateur legal eagle named Theodore Boone. Such creative longevity is not that unusual in the suspense genre, but what is rare is Grisham's feat of keeping up the pace of producing, on average, a novel a year. In 2017, he published two, without a notable diminishment of ingenuity or literary quality. Dame Agatha Christie, who barely paused between books to sharpen pencils during her 50-year marathon mystery career, is another such marvel. Which brings us to The Guardians. Grisham's latest terrific novel. Grisham's main character here is so-called innocence lawyer, a workaholic attorney, and Episcopal priest named Cullen Post. Now, Post has trimmed his life down to the barest of essentials, living in Spartan quarters above the nonprofit Guardian Ministries, his workplace in Savannah, Georgia. The book focuses on Post's investigation into the wrongful conviction of a black man named Quincy Miller, who was set up to take the fall for a murder of a white lawyer in a small Florida town some 22 years before the opening of this story. In his life away from his writing desk, by the way, Grisham serves on the board of directors of the Innocence Project. Post's efforts to ferret out exculpatory evidence in this cold case put him in grave danger because, for one thing, the shadowy drug cartel responsible for the murder has been known to hold grisly parties in isolated jungle locales south of the border. In the dead center of this novel, Post hears a cautionary tale from a traumatized survivor of one of these gatherings. This account calls upon Grisham to summon up his heretofore unrealized inner Caligula. In an affecting backstory, Post recalls his early career as a public defender, but the grotesque contradictions of that job, particularly Post's final assignment to defend a depraved teenage rapist and murderer, brought on a nervous breakdown. Well, after a sincere come-to-Jesus moment during his recovery, Post was ordained and began serving with a prison ministry, which led him to innocence work and eventually to Guardian Ministries. A trim, four-person operation, Guardian Ministries consists of Post, an underpaid litigator who's a single mother of boys, an exoneree named Frankie, who's turned private investigator, and the nonprofit's founder, a former business executive who, similar to Post, had a conversion experience and dedicated her life to righting wrongs of the criminal justice system. That said, The Guardians is nuanced in its moral vision. Post acknowledges that most of the prisoners who contact him alleging wrongful convictions are, in fact, guilty. But it's the thousands of others who have become his vocation. It's fairly easy to convict an innocent man and virtually impossible to exonerate one, Post reminds a potential client. So far, the team has exonerated 8 prisoners. Quincy Miller may just become the 9th. His fate will depend on a relentless reinvestigation conducted by Post and his colleagues and some strong-arming of jailhouse snitches and other witnesses who gave false testimony years ago. The lawyer Quincy was convicted of killing turns out to have had ties to a drug cartel. So, too, does the now-retired sheriff who was in charge of the investigation 22 years ago. Post knows he'll eventually have to visit the secluded scene of the crime, Seabrook, Florida, but he wisely hesitates. Thinking out loud with a colleague, Post says, "Our clients are in prison because someone else pulled the trigger. They're still out there laughing because the cops nailed the wrong guy. The last thing they want is an innocent lawyer digging through the cold case." In his titanic efforts to turn justice denied for Miller into justice delayed, Post courts danger both human and supernatural. The climax of The Guardian slyly nods to many a classic Nancy Drew adventure. Post and Frankie steel themselves to break into a boarded-up haunted house, climb up into its dank attic, and unearth, as Nancy would say, a clue that just may decide Miller's fate, all before the drug gang gets wind of their location. Post is a driven and likable loner, whom I hope Grisham will bring back in future novels. After all, as The Guardians makes clear, there's plenty of work left for an innocence lawyer to do. Once again, that's the newest book by John Grisham, and it's called The Guardians. And that was a review by NPR program critic Maureen Corrigan. Now let's take a look at a new book by Catherine Coulter. It's called Labyrinth. The number one New York Times best-selling FBI thriller series returns with another tour de force in which agents Savage and Sherlock stumble into a bizarre case that's more complicated and twisted than any they've ever encountered. On a Tuesday afternoon, Agent Sherlock is driving in town, downtown Washington, when her Volvo is suddenly T-boned at an intersection. Well, as her car spins out of control, a man's body slams against her windshield and then blackness. When she finally regains consciousness in the hospital, she's told about the accident and the man she struck. No one knows yet who he is or where he is because he ran away. From DNA, they discover his name is Justice Cummings, and he's a CIA analyst at Langley, and he's still missing. Meanwhile, in the small town of Gaffers Ridge, Virginia, Special Agent Griffin Hammersmith rescues a kidnapped woman claiming her captor had probably murdered three missing teenage girls. However, the man she accuses is the local sheriff's nephew and a member of a very powerful family, reputed to have psychic powers. When the sheriff arrests Griffin and the rescued woman, Carson Da Silva, he calls Savage for help. Together, they have to weave their way through a labyrinth of lies to find the truth of a terrible secret. If there's one thing that readers can count on in a Coulter novel, it is that she always delivers amazingly eerie and complex thrillers, and Labyrinth is no different. With white-knuckle pacing and shocking twists and turns, this is another electrifying novel that will sink its teeth into you. Again, the book is called Labyrinth, and it's by the popular author Catherine Coulter. Next, let's talk about a book by William W. Johnstone. It's called Frontier America. Preacher plus McAllister equals double the mayhem. Two of the Johnstone's most legendary heroes, the rugged mountain man known as Preacher and the Scottish clan rancher Jamie Ian McAllister, here together for the first time, are forced to choose sides in a blood-soaked battle for the heart and soul of a divided nation. It's called Frontier America. As the father of a young Crow tribesman, Preacher would like nothing more than to see the longtime natives and newly arrived settlers live together in peace. Then the killing starts. As a family man and frontiersman, Jamie Ian McAllister is more than happy to help the officers at Fort Kearney negotiate a peace treaty with the Crow Nation. Until it all goes to hell. This is not the American dream they were looking for. This is a nightmare, a brutal, blood-drenched frontier war that two heroic men must fight and win, or one struggling nation will never come together for liberty and justice for all. Live free, read hard. It's called Frontier America. Sounds like a good one, by William W. Johnstone. Now let's turn to a book that sounds like it might be a little less bloody than Frontier America. This is one called The Wedding Shop by Rachel Houck. And this is from the New York Times best-selling author of The Wedding Dress. This one is a follow-up called The Wedding Shop. Here's the plot. Two women separated by decades, both set out to help others find their dreams when their own have crumbled. It's the early 1930s, but Cora Scott is walking in stride as a career woman after having inherited her great-aunt's wedding shop in Hart's Bend, Tennessee, where brides come from as far away as Birmingham to experience her famed bridal treatment. Meanwhile, Cora is counting down the days until her own true love returns from the river to make her his bride. But days turn into months, and months to years. All the while, Birch Good continues to woo Cora and try to show her that while he is solid and dependable, he can be swept off her feet. More than 80 years later, former Air Force Captain Haley Morgan has returned home to Hart's Bend after finishing her commitment to military service. After the devastating death of her best friend, Tammy, and discovering the truth about the man she loved, Haley is searching for her place in life. When Haley decides to open the romantic but abandoned wedding shop where she and Tammy played and dreamed as children, she begins a journey of courage, mystery, and love. As Cora's and Haley's stories intertwine through time in the shadow of the beloved wedding shop, they both discover the power of their own dreams and the magic of everyday love. The Wedding Shop is the kind of book I love, says one reviewer, complete with flawed yet realistic characters, dual timelines that intersect unexpectedly, a touch of magic, and a large dose of faith. Two breathtaking romances are the perfect bookends for this novel about love, forgiveness, and following your dreams, and a stunning antique wedding dress with a secret of its own. This is more than just a good read. It's a book to savor, so says Karen White, a best-selling author and reviewer for The New York Times. The book is called The Wedding Shop, and the author is Rachel Houck. Now it's time for a very popular author. Here is a book about by Stuart Woods, and it is called Stealth. And I'm going to read a Kirkus review right now, which is very popular, very good reviews. This is Stealth by Stuart Woods. Looks like you're in the spy business, Secretary of State Holly Barker tells Stone Barrington. For the papers he's just signed, extend as well as formalize his work for the CIA. Since the recent adventures of the New York ex-cop, attorney, playboy, mega-consumer have involved more and more consulting work for the agency, it's only natural that Director Lance Cabot would seek to cement their relationship by reaching out to Stone at Windward Hall in the south of England and offering him an appointment as Deputy Director for Special Operations, or maybe Senior Advisor to the Director. And the plain truth is that the change in Stone's status couldn't come at a better time. Well, after accepting British Foreign Minister Sir Oswald Towne's spur-of-the-moment invitation to join the forces training at M16 Station 2 in the Scottish Highlands, so that he can get in shape and then drive Dame Felicity Devonshire's Aston Martin back to England, Stones totaled the car and narrowly escaped death when a sniper shoots out one of its high-priced tires. Well, this little episode hasn't really gone anywhere, but it has introduced Stone to Lieutenant Rose McGill, whose medical attentions after the incident he repays carnally, and Station 2 Commander Colonel Roger Fife Simpson, who shortly promoted to Brigadier and made Felicity second in command at the M16. The Brigadier, it turns out, has a long history of blackmail, and when Stone and Felicity discover what he's been up to and force him out of the service, he vows revenge, another timely development since the Russians, who instantly swoop down on him and press him into turning against his old mates, would like nothing better than for him to use his remaining, albeit frayed, insider credentials to arrange the assassinations of Felicity and Stone. Well, since the Brigadier is so well provisioned by his Russian handlers with everything from a new handgun to a new lover, it's nice that Stone is equally well supported by both M16 and the CIA. Just in case you're worried, three attempts on the hero's life leave not a hair out of place, of course. And that book is called Stealth, and it's by the very popular mystery author Stuart Woods. And you're listening to Heard Any Good Books Lately? An exclusive production of the North Carolina Reading Service. I'm George Douglas. Thanks for joining me today. It's great to be with you here in 2020 as we start a new year and a new decade. Now let's read another new book. This one is by Kim Vogel Sawyer, and it's entitled A Silken Thread. For listeners who love a heartwarming romance and a rich historical setting, comes a tale of a young woman with a heavy burden, the International Cotton Exposition, and the pursuit of true love. 18-year-old Laurel Millard, youngest of seven children, is expected to stay home and take care of Mama by her older siblings, but Laurel has dreams of starting her own family. Operating a silk loom at the Atlanta Exposition will give her the chance to capture the heart of a man wealthy enough to take care of Laurel and any children that she might bear, as well as her mother. Brendan Rochester's parents have given him an ultimatum. settle down with a wife, or lose his family inheritance. At the exposition, Brendan meets Laurel. Marrying her would satisfy his parents' command. She would look lovely on his arm for social events, and in her besotted state, he believes she would overlook him continuing to pursue rowdy adventures with his unmarried buddies. Brendan decides to woo Laurel. Willie Sharp is not well off and must take on an extra job at the Atlanta Exposition as a security guard. When mischief makers cause trouble in the women's building, Willie is put in charge of keeping the building secure. He enjoys visiting with Laurel, who seems like the little sister he never had. But his feelings for Laurel change to something much deeper. Can Willie convince Laurel that he can give her a better life, even with so little to offer? If you'd like to find out the answer to that, you might enjoy this book. It's called A Silken Thread by Kim Vogel Sawyer. Now let's turn to another popular author, Danielle Steele, with a book that is called Turning Point. Number one New York Times bestseller in Daniel Steele's powerful new novel, Four Trauma Doctors, the best and the brightest in their field, confront exciting new challenges both personally and professionally when given an unusual opportunity. Here's the plot. Bill Browning heads the trauma unit at San Francisco's busiest emergency room, SF General. With his ex-wife and daughters in London, he immerses himself in his work, and he lives for rare visits with his children. A rising star at her teaching hospital, UCSF at Mission Bay, Stephanie Lawrence has two young sons, a frustrated stay-at-home husband, and not enough time for any of them. Harvard-educated Wendy Jones is a dedicated trauma doctor at Stanford, trapped in a dead-end relationship with a married cardiac surgeon. And Tom Wiley's popularity with women rivals the superb medical skills he employs at his Oakland Medical Center, but he refuses to let anyone get too close, determined to remain unattached forever. Well, these exceptional doctors are chosen for an honor and a unique project, to work with their counterparts in Paris in a mass casualty training program. Well, as professionals, they will gain invaluable knowledge from the program. As ordinary men and women, they will find that the City of Light opens up incredible new possibilities, exhilarating, enticing, and frightening. When an unspeakable act of mass violence galvanizes them into action, their temporary life in Paris becomes a stark turning point, a time to face harder choices than they have ever made before, with consequences that will last a lifetime. Again, that book is called Turning Point by the very popular author Danielle Steele. Now, here's one of my favorites. I've been reading her books for, I think, almost 40 years now. Here's a newest book by Mary Higgins Clark, and it's called I've Got My Eyes on You. After a party when her parents are away, 18-year-old Carrie Dowling is found fully dressed at the bottom of the family pool. The immediate suspect is her boyfriend, who had a bitter argument with her at the party. Then there is a 20-year-old neighbor who was angry because she didn't invite him to the party. Or is there someone else who has not yet been seen on the radar? Carrie's older sister, Aline, a 28-year-old guidance counselor, is determined to assist the prosecutor's office in learning the truth. She does not realize that now she is putting her own life in danger. This book is available from the North Carolina Library for the Blind, and it is called I've Got My Eyes on You by the popular mystery author Mary Higgins Clark. Now here's a book by Amy Clipston. It is entitled A Hopeful Heart, and it is the first in a series. It's called The Hearts of the Lancaster Grand Hotel series, and this is book number one. In A Hopeful Heart, this first novel in this series from best-selling author Amy Clipston, Hannah finds herself at a crossroads in her life. Her community offers her love and support after the untimely death of her husband, but an Englisher offers her the chance of a new life after her unexpected tragedy. Wealthy businessman Trey Peterson is surprised by his attraction to the gentle Amish woman who works as a housekeeper in the Lancaster Grand Hotel. They share a common bond of loss and are able to offer each other comfort and support as they journey through their grief. Joshua Glick wants nothing more than to offer his friendship and love to Hannah and her family. Not only is he her late husband's brother and business partner, he has always been in love with Hannah. A Hopeful Heart is filled with surprising twists as Hannah tries to balance her life in the Amish community and her growing love for an outsider. It's called A Hopeful Heart by Amy Clipston, and it is the first in a new series, The Hearts of the Lancaster Grand Hotel, and this one is book number one. And time for one more short one. This is Lessons from Lucy, The Simple Joys of an Old Happy Dog by Dave Barry. Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist and best-selling author of Dave Barry Turns 40, he now shows how to age gracefully, taking cues from his beloved and highly intelligent dog, Lucy. Faced with the obstacles and challenges of life after middle age, Dave Barry turns to his best dog, Lucy, to learn how to live his best life. From make new friends to don't stop having fun, Dave navigates his later years with good humor and grace. Lucy teaches Dave how to live in the present, how to let go of daily grievances, and how to feel good in your own skin. The lessons are drawn from Dave's routine humiliations and stream-of-consciousness accounts of the absurdities of daily life, which will leave you heaving with laughter and recognition. He is a very funny guy. Laugh out loud, hilarious, whether he's trying to pay attention to the people you love or deciding to let go of your anger. Dave Barry's Lessons from Lucy is a witty and wise guide to joyous living. And that's just about all the time we have for this month's edition of Heard Any Good Books Lately? I'm George Douglas. Hope you enjoyed it. If you'd like more information about how to become a patron of the North Carolina Library for the Blind, simply Google or search North Carolina Library for the Blind or call toll-free 1-888-388-2460. Again, that's 888-388-2460. You can also use the same numbers and website to join the Friends of the North Carolina Library for the Blind and Physically Handicapped. It's that wonderful organization that sponsors this feature on the North Carolina Reading Service. This program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Heard Any Good Books Lately will be available right after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. So long until next time.